Hey everyone, it's your host Alex Kessler. I'm here talking about our sponsor, that is Wizardry Foundry. This episode is brought to you by Wizardry Foundry, the maker of the Grimoire Deck Box. Save the shoebox for something else. Store your cards in the Grimoire Deck Box, a deck box that looks and feels like a spellbook. Order your Grimoire and Grimoire Pro Tour today with the code MMCASTFEB5, that's MMCASTFEB5, to get 25% and enter into the raffle for a chance to win our brand new Pandora Deck Box, a fully customizable 3D printed deck box. I got one that looks like an X-Wing. It's pretty sweet. You can actually just go buy them now, but if you use the code to buy the Grimoire or Grimoire Pro Tour deck box, you have a chance to win it for free. So go check them out at http://shop.wizardryfoundry.com, and I will see you guys after the intro music.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the official worst set in the history of Magic review.
Wait, I guess of the reviews we're going to do, we're not going to do Homelands
or Fallen Empires
or any of those sets.
Yeah,
no, so they could print a terrible set.
And
I
it's
guess.
Not really a review. This is what we're doing is we're doing top 10 cards from Kamigawa Block.
Yes.
And
which you don't like, apparently.
No, but there are good cards in Kamigawa Block.
I do. So like, do you want to? We were talking about this before. I want to break down your rating of every block in Modern.
Yeah. So okay. So before we will do that. Give us. Stick with us. But sure. Before we do that, we should get everything out of the way. First of all, we're on Twitter.
We are at the MMCast. You should follow me at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media, and you guys can like share your thoughts and whatnot and critique.
Oh, I also have a Twitch stream now. That's kind of the MMCast Twitch stream at the same time. Yeah, Xander574.
Oh, that's cool.
Go check it out.
And we have a sister podcast, The Command Zone, also on RocketJump.com, where you can find our podcast. They do Commander content. That's Jimmy Wong and Josh Lee Kwai. They are super awesome.
Yeah.
They have a great, great product. I guessed it on a podcast this week.
Did you?
Did O2 drop?
Yeah.
They were formerly associated with MTG Focus series, and they just launched their own slightly more kind of fun, little less spiky type of deal. And we got to talk about what my perfect modern format, like with bannings, would look like. They interviewed me. It was really crazy.
Weird.
It was cool.
What would be your perfect format without bannings? Which cards would you unban?
Yeah, it was like sort of the gist of it was like I'd give it a year, then I'd take Splinter Twin off. I'd immediately unban Blood Raid Elf. Depending on how that went, I would consider Ancestral Visions, but I wouldn't want to see like that run into like cascading into it. Stoneforge Mystic comes off immediately. I think all of the unfun games taking too long cards you leave off. So I still think like Top needs to stay banned. The Eggs cards,
Sword of the Meek,
Seething Song. Sword of the Meek's right on the edge for me.
Okay,
but I don't think unbanning Sword of the Meek does anything to make the format more fun. I think it slows it down and just homogenizes what decks do because it's too easy to fit that into your deck.
Sure.
So I don't think that would be very much fun, especially if you were going to unban Stoneforge Mystic.
Oh, yeah. I don't think both of those. I mean, we've talked about this before. But okay, so
Deathrite stays banned. That's kind of the gist of it.
Okay. So, and if they want to hear more about that, they go to...
Yeah, you go find out O2 Drop. I think O2Drop.com, I think, is where you can find it.
Okay.
But they were...
iTunes.
Yeah, they were great. Likely. Yeah, they're all over the place. They're really awesome, so check that out.
And last but not least, we have a Patreon, guys, and some of you guys have donated, and it's amazing, and we're super excited. We're almost at the $400 mark, and once we get to $500, we'll do live streams once a month that you guys could watch.
No, I think you're wrong. I think it's live streaming video weekly once we get to $500.
No, it's once a month.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
but I will say this, because we had a conversation last week on the podcast with Tolarian Community College and the professor, and we were talking about just like Patreon accounts and how now in podcasting, and especially in Magic podcasting, I mean, we all, for the most part, are doing something like this, you know, from
a Patreon or a Kickstarter.
Well, and also like providing content like this largely from the privacy of a personal studio or a home or something like that. And it, you know, all of us want help making this happen. The thing is, what maybe people don't realize is that even though we get to be featured on wizards.com sometimes and like we
Rocket Jump.
Yeah. Like we still make $0.
This is all out of pocket.
Like, yeah. We just do this and we take the time to do the editing ourselves and we love it. And you know, when we go to tournaments, if we have a playmat, you know, we made the playmat ourselves. It cost us exactly what it would cost to sell one of you guys a playmat. So the point is, the reason we started a Patreon is because we love the content. We've gotten a lot of support from you guys on Twitter and iTunes asking for more of it. To do more of it, we do need to hire like a producer and a video editor to do it at the level we'd like to, which is
Yeah, I mean, like eventually, and this is a later thing, and I don't even think we have it there, but I want to get to the level that Jimmy and Josh are at.
Yeah.
Of doing like video content every week, and like we don't have the talent or the finances to be able to pay an editor to do that for us. So that's kind of one of our eventual future goals. And we also want to do cool videos, and we want to live stream, and we want to live stream the audio, and like that all takes some amount of money that we just don't have yet. And it'd be cool if we could do that stuff for you guys.
Yeah. So the reason Professor just reminded us that a lot of people are not aware of that because we have the affiliation with a larger company like Rocket Jump. People would assume that, you know, this is this big, big highfalutin organization, but actually it's just Kessler and Bateman just sitting here being like, this is what's sweet about Grand Architect.
When we say we were in a kitchen, we were in a kitchen because we were homeless.
You can check my Instagram account. It's just us sitting there in a kitchen.
But yeah, guys, so patreon.com
/the MMcast.
It's also linked on rocketjump.com's website where you find us generally. So,
and if you,
it'd be really appreciated, even like a dollar.
Yeah, well, and the deal is, if anybody, in case like you guys know this from last time, your first, there's a swag box option. I think it's $50 a month. But the deal is, the first month you do that, we send you a Masters of Modern playmat. That's the first item you get. And then subsequently, you get other cool signed items and things that have monetary value. They're not just going to be like Cracker Jacks. But
generally, at a bare minimum, it'll be a $25 value, depending on give or take five.
Yeah, and then aside from that, personalized deck techs and deck doctors of your guys' ideas on the podcast and things like that, that's $5 a month. So that's the sort of like the, that's the bread and butter for most people who listen and want more content. They want to be able to get all the extra stuff. It's basically $5 a month. So help us out if you can. Otherwise, keep listening to the podcast and let's talk about how crappy
Comic Con is. If you can't, just tweet at us on Twitter all the time. That's generally where you'll find us. All right, so Comic Con block.
Yeah.
So this is like your least favorite modern block.
Yeah. So, all right. So like, this is what I was saying to Kessler before we started. So we've had modern legal sets since 03. The first one is Mirrodin block all the way up until the soon to be released Shadows Over Innistrad. And we've revisited planes and we've reused mechanics. We've had core sets.
I do honestly wish we started in the year 2000. I wish Wizards just did it from
Mercadian Masks.
It was the set before that, I think.
Oh well, you could.
Or I guess the first set of Mercadian Masks was 2000.
You could, because if you'd done that, then you would have had to deal with Wizard with Urza's block.
Oh sure, yeah. Start with Mercadian Masks. Start with the year 2000.
Yeah,
that's like the beginning of the millennium. I think that's where it should have started.
Yeah, I mean, you can divide Magic into like, there's definitely a chunk of design that exists between Mercadian Masks up until Onslaught block that is like,
when people ask me like, oh, what's your podcast about? I'm like, oh, it's just every Magic set from the year 2000, because it's way easier than being like
03?
From 2003, because that's when Mirrodin came out and
blah, blah. Yeah, right. I mean, you have to explain what a format is if they don't know what that is. So it's a whole, that's a whole.
I did that today for someone and it was exhausting.
I've done it with my girlfriend several times. She tracks the word modern though. If I say the word modern in any context, she's like, oh, that's your podcast. But I'm like, well, you know, there's modern art. There's a lot of things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
Whitney's finally recognizing the Wizards of the Coast coverage team.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's really cool.
She knows Rich Hagan and Ryan David Marshall. All right, anyway, so if you go through step by step and trying to establish what makes Kamigawa block, and for the record, if you love Kamigawa block, I like a lot of stupid things in Magic too that aren't good, so like zero judgment. Like I talk about Grand Architect and Spell Scout way too much, and like a lot of people.
Well, here's my thing of Kamigawa block. I'm a big, like, I like a lot of Japanese culture. Like I grew up kind of on it, and that's, you know, part of my life, and there are parts of Kamigawa block that are really sweet. I would love a set that's like ninjas and samurais and even some spirits, but you know, like the layer of like legendary plus arcane plus spirits above like all the cool snake and rat tribal. Like half of this set block is sweet and half this block is just this muck, mechanical muck that I don't want to deal with. There's like,
well, okay, like so we will explain set by set here, sort of like where they rank on a scale of 1 to 10, like just the general block. But like the thing about Kamigawa block that bothers me so much, I think about when I read a card that seems complicated and how many seconds I will give it before I just like move on to the next card. Unless like I specifically have been told this card is a tournament staple and you need to know about it. But if I'm just scrolling through a database and I come across a card, maybe where I don't recognize the name too much, every single one of the Kamigawa flip cards, for the most part, is just like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm like, this is the this is the ugliest, like most poorly executed idea.
Well, like, and there's also like, there's the mechanic where blue had a you return X amount of lands to your hand to do an effect mechanic.
Yeah.
And it's just like a brick of text that's the entire card and not worth my time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And they're not powerful. There's the fact that like okay, great example here. So comparing to Time Spiral block, which is my all-time favorite block, and the Suspend mechanic, which for those of you who don't know what Suspend is a deal. It's like an alternative casting cost where you would pay...
You're paying time for mana.
Well, let's just say that the hard cast on a 5/5 creature is 5. You would maybe pay 1 and put it exiled from the game with a die, and you would remove a counter every upkeep until it had 0, and then it would be cast. So it's just delaying when you get it. The point is, there's not a lot of cards that have ever been printed that interact with Suspend, and cards that are in exile with Suspend counters. So if you're going to build something in Modern or Casual with that theme, you're very restricted to what was printed in that block.
Suspend also is a mechanic that doesn't inherently require you to have synergy with it, because you could just cast a good card just on turn one, you cast it for 1, and then you won't get it for 5 turns.
The thing is where this relates to Kamigawa block is the same idea can be said for Spirit and Arcane, because they've never printed any support for that mechanic outside of the set. Now, that's not to say that it's...
There are some spirits, but like the Arcane issue is you can't use Arcane cards without other Arcane cards.
Right. So you're stuck with everything that was designed in this one block. So that's like where the first problem is that if you're reading through the cards, it's like, okay, that's an issue. Then you have these kind of ugly flip cards that don't make a whole lot of sense. Then you have the whole like legendary things matter theme, which at the time made a bit more sense, but now...
Well, the issue you run into is every single rare card is like a name of a person. And not only that, it's like a Japanese-based name. So it's like a complicated name that's hard to say, and they all sound the same. So I literally like can't tell the difference between anyone.
Yeah, and like they swung for the fences in terms of flavor. From a flavor standpoint, it is the most flavorful set ever designed. Like the thing is dripping with flavor. That's all it is. I mean, everything from snakes to samurai to rats.
I'd say Innistrad is more flavorful.
Spirits. No, because Innistrad like still
every
interacts.
Card is a reference to something.
But Innistrad still interacts with the rest of like.
But that
magic.
Doesn't mean you're not flavorful.
It's when cards exist and you feel like you're reading them, you're like, the point of this card is to make me feel this way, not to be consistent or interesting with the rest of Magic's history, but just to make me feel this way about this one piece of culture. That's the only reason I would pay attention. To me, that is like
I think they sacrificed gameplay for flavor,
right?
In Kamigawa, I think Innistrad blended gameplay and flavor together perfectly.
Like, okay, so if we're gonna go 1 to 10, like just really quickly, block by block, where we would sort of just rank them.
Right, I'm gonna say the block, you rank it in your opinion.
Okay, and this so in this scale, 10 is perfect, 0 is a total fail, 5 is dead average, and this is considering not like just the limited environment or like the modern appeal. It's for me, it's just like the way that I regard the cards in that set in general over time.
It is a little bit weighted towards constructed though.
Weighted towards constructed. How the cards in the set interact with other cards that are still being printed and have been printed.
Sure. All right. So starting Scars of Mirrodin block.
Scars of Mirrodin?
No. Regular Mirrodin block.
Solid 8, 8.5.
Okay. Skipping Kamigawa block because the rules. Yep. Ravnica.
A 9. The only reason it's not a 10 is because I think some of the multicolored cards, they didn't understand how to balance the power yet, and I think it suffers a little bit for that reason.
All right. Time Spiral block.
Perfect 10.
All right. Lorwyn, just the first two sets.
First Lorwyn Morningtide, like a 5.
All right. Shadowmoor.
Shadowmoor Eventide, like that's like a 7.5.
Okay.
Maybe a 7.
Shards of Alara.
A weird one. A little lower for me, like 6, 6.5.
All right. Zendikar.
7. Worldwake and Rise push Zendikar way up for me. I guess we got the fetch lands and some landfall, so maybe like 7.8.
All right. Scars of Mirrodin.
6. No. New Phyrexia is like a 10, and the rest of it is like a 5, so 7.5.
Innistrad.
Weird, because the limited's so good, but Avacyn Restored such a bad set, and Dark Ascension's such a mediocre set. Like,
but from constructive purposes, Avacyn gives you Grizzlebrand.
Yes, I'm going to give it like a 6. Okay. Love Innistrad, but not for construction.
All right. What was that for Innistrad?
Innistrad block was followed immediately by
RTR. Return of the Raptica.
Like 9.5.
Okay. That was last year. Theros.
4.
So Theros and Earth, well, we'll find out. Theros is your pretty
Theros
low.
Is a really bad set. I mean, because Born of the Gods is not good and Journey into Nyx is horrible.
You don't like Journey into Nyx? Wait. Constellation is sweet.
No, that's the
Theros is the one. Yeah. All right. After Theros goes the one we're in, or Khons? Khons of Tagir.
Khons is pretty sweet. Khons is like a 7 or an 8. It's like all right. Probably an 8.
I probably put Khons as 9. Yeah. Like all the way through. Like,
Delve's really, really awesome. The dragons are super
all right,
fun.
Last but not least, Battle for Zendikar.
BFC Oath.
Oh, it's not last but not least, but
undecided. It's still testing with
all
it.
Right. Now least combo goblock.
Like a two.
Like a two. Okay.
Like a one or a
okay.
two.
So like, we're going to rate the top 10 best cards from that set today, and then we're going to battle off the five most underrated cards from the set.
The hilarious thing, though, is that the quality of the top 10 cards from the block, they're actually pretty decent. Like,
well, like power levels back then was also much higher.
There's some weird, there are some weird cards. Oh, yeah, that's right. I didn't include that. There's some weird cards that are like definitely should see more play and don't. All right. I mean, do you want to just start with our 10? And
well, I'm going to go through the banned cards from the set. So these, like, this has a pretty above average ban list from this block. And so Umazaz Jitte, which is arguably the second best equipment ever printed after the other, Skull Clamp, which is not really an equipment.
I mean, yeah, Skull Clamp is totally ridiculous.
Blazing Shoal. Which is just like, in fact, was printed, Blazing Shoal became too good.
And it was banned after it won?
No, it didn't win. It just top aided. It was so quick, and Sam it was Black against Black. The rule.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if this card was maybe able to be taken off the ban list. I'm not saying it will be, but it hasn't really had a moment to survive with Abrupt Decay, and Abrupt Decay wrecks this card.
It's a solid turn two kill. Like,
That's very true.
Like a very three-card turn two kill.
Sensei's Divining Top, one of my favorite cards. I understand why it's banned. Takes turns forever.
Top is consistent with Second Sunrise or, like, to some degree, Seething Song. Now, that's more just power level push, but just like things.
No,
that make
Second
the game
Sunrise, Top, and arguably what I think Sword of the Meek are all banned partly from a tournament logistics perspective. Of the games will last way longer if those are around.
They're not fun, yeah.
And last but not least, Glimpse of Nature. Elves is already a really good deck. It doesn't need to have infinite card draw in one turn.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so top 10. Number 10. What's your 10?
Disrupting Shoal.
Okay.
It's what's
it do?
It's blue X counter target spell with converted mana cost X. You may remove a blue card in your hand with converted mana cost X rather than playing converted mana Disrupting Shoal's mana cost. So just if you have Remand in hand, you can exile Remand and cast Disrupting Shoal for two.
It's a free counter spell.
Yeah,
it's the closest thing to Force of Will.
Yeah, it's a little janky. It's fun if you build the right kind of blue deck. I've seen it be played effectively before. Often, decks in this format that want to play a free counterspell don't care about the next turn, so Pact of Negation is the better card.
Right.
But Pact of Negation you can't play on turn two, and you can play Blazing Shoal or Disrupting Shoal.
Sure.
We had that.
And you can also just hard cast Disrupting Shoal for three as a bad mana leak, but sometimes you'll just get them.
No, because it's equal to one, not unless they pay one.
Oh, it's equal to what X is.
It's not that good. We built that cool deck that if you guys go back, you can find a Brew episode from like 15, 12 or 15 episodes ago. It was that Steel of the Godhead, Geist of St. Traft, blue deck. It was all about like really, really aggressive blue-white creatures and cool auras and stuff. And I believe we had three or four of these in the deck because the curve went really, really consistently from one to three. And so you would almost always be able to cast it. And it seemed to work pretty well when we tested the deck.
So my number 10?
Yeah.
Ghostly Prison.
Okay, mate. It barely got cut from mine.
So Ghostly Prison, two colors and a white. It is an enchantment. Creatures can't attack you unless their controller pays two for each creature attacking you. It's one of the better like prison cards. It's because it's a prison.
Yeah, it's worth I think it's worth like $12 or something. Or $8 or $10.
$16. Yeah, $25
holy
for a foil.
Holy.
Yeah, I mean, like, basically this card's great against the creatures that are attacking. Right now it's really good because the Eldrazi are really good, and this is a card that's pretty decent against them.
Yep.
Generally, you want to be able to stop your opponent from attacking if creatures are aggressive, and this is one of the best ways in the format to do it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
If you can't go with Bridge from Below.
Not Bridge from Below.
Sorry.
Snaring Bridge.
Same card. All right.
You make that mistake.
All the bridges. All right, number nine.
Number nine, I'm going to go with Kataki War's Wage, the classic anti-affinity card. It is one white, one colorless for a 2/1 legendary creature, like we mentioned. Kataki's War's Wage is his name. Each artifact gains an upkeep cost of one colorless or sacrifice this artifact. So it's the perfect anti-affinity card, kind of. It is really good against them. They can still often just like pay for like and then kill you that turn.
Pay for the threats and then get at you.
Yeah. I mean, also, like if they have a Ravager, like they can just do the thing where they sack all of the things to Ravager.
It's great against Cranial Plating. It's okay against Ravager.
Yeah. It's really good. I mean, it's not like it's not good against them. People have talked about it in the past as if it's like the ultimate like I win the game card.
Stony Silence is better.
Yeah, Stony Silence is better. I mean, neither one of them will stop you, will stop them from just killing you the next turn if they have a threat that, like...
No, Stony Silence will do that. Well, if you, well, you have to be able to stop the thing that it's equipped to, I guess, but if you can get it on turn two, they can't be
equipped.
They can't equip it, though. Well, like...
If it's already equipped, and then you resolve sure. Stony Silence, it doesn't matter.
But, like, that's a turn four Stony Silence, not a turn two.
I mean, or, like, they try to resolve it, and in response to them casting it, you just sack all but three artifacts, put all the counters on its champion, and then attack for, like, nine and win. Like, that works.
Sure, that's still a turn... Like, because it's a two-drop. Well, yeah.
For sure. I mean, Stony Silence is...
Stony Silence is a way worse top deck than a main, like, opening hand card.
And I always end up playing...
Three of them.
Stony Silence, yeah. I play three or four in sideboards.
All right. So my number nine is Through the Breach.
Okay, really?
Yeah.
That's your number nine?
Yeah. It's been doing really well recently because there's both the...
It's done well since the beginning of the format.
Oh, sure. Oh, you're saying it should be higher than number
nine.
Way
higher.
Okay. No, yeah, it's number nine. this is a four colorless, one red. It is an instant arcane, which is one of the few times this has been relevant in Magic's history. Put a creature card from your hand into play. That creature has haste. Sacrifice that creature at end of turn. You can splice it onto arcane, which means that if you cast a different arcane for a cheaper cost of two... colorless, two red, you can cast this attached to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's rarely does you actually see that happen. It has happened before. I've seen it happen in Modern before.
No. The Disrupting Shoal decks or the green Shoal decks.
Oh, then you're talking about the new ones.
The new ones.
Rish Shoal brand.
Yeah, where it's you're literally attaching this 4/4 mana, which is really important, to the green Shoal that lets you gain a bunch of life.
Right.
So that you then gain a bunch of life that you can then use to draw a bunch of cards with Grizzlebrand to Through the Breach, and it's nuts.
Yeah, I mean,
this card's seeing a lot of play right now in Primeval Titan, green, red, Valakut decks.
It's, like, so much better than you're giving it credit for when you actually consider how fringe most of the rest of the cards on this list have been over time and, like, how not good most of them are in a vacuum.
Okay, I can see that. I can see me being wrong on the placement at this number nine.
I mean, it's just intrinsically more powerful than most everything that's on this list. All right, my next card.
I don't know. My list has some pretty... overly played. You're going to really love my number three. I'm predicting the future. You're going to be mad about it. All right. What's your number eight?
I wonder if your number three is my number four. I'll bet you it is. My number eight is Kira Great Glass Spinner.
Okay. I don't have that on my list.
Oh, you cut her?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, she's like, it's weird because she doesn't see the amount of play she should.
She's generally a one of in Merfolk sometimes.
Yeah. Kira is like one of those cards where for whatever reason... she doesn't end up seeing as much play as she should. And so when you're building and you come across her, you're usually like, oh my goodness, this is so good. Why am I not playing this card? Like, this is such a powerful effect. And then it's just kind of like...
what is it, like a you tap out on turn three for a 2/2?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I guess once they ban
it's
Eldrazi,
also pretty bad against Abrupt Decay. So when Jund decks are doing really well, this deck doesn't do that. This is worse. And yeah, I mean, there are definitely problems the card has. No, it's really good, though.
Because if you decay it, it just dies, right?
Like, it just basically makes it so, like, Splinter Twin can't beat Merfolk without just comboing out. I mean, Splinter Twin's no longer a deck, but blue-based remove Snapcaster and Mage Lightning Bolt decks can't beat Akira.
For those of you that don't know what this card does, I think it's from Betrayers. Is that what the X was? I think.
Maybe. Mike currently has a Modern Master symbol on it, so I don't know.
It's blue-blue colorless legendary creature spirit 2/2 flyer. Creatures you control have whenever this creature becomes the target of a spell or ability for the first time in a turn, counter that spell or ability. So, pretty strong. I mean, powerful card.
My number eight is Threads of Disloyalty.
Another card that just barely got cut from my list.
Yeah. Blue and blue and colorless. Okay. Threads of Disloyalty. Threads of Disloyalty can enchant only a creature with converted mana cost 2 or less. You control that enchanted creature. So in this format, like, and this is definitely good more often when Tarmogoyf is really good.
Right.
But there are so many, like, especially before Splinter Twin was banned, so much was inherently based on 2-drops. The format was all about 2-drops, and this is one of the most efficient ways to steal those 2-drops, and it's yours now, and now you have a Tarmogoyf, and they discarded a card.
I mean, classically, stealing Tarmogoyf is really good.
Yeah.
that's usually, like, what this would come down to. This is, like, one of those cards that will forever be on the fringe, and, like, when the format rotates in this direction, this card will get good again.
I generally throw this into my sideboards if I have a matchup that I wish was slightly better against Jund and those kind of decks, and also had some game, because it's also not the worst against Affinity. There's, like, definitely some weird random matches that this is okay against.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly certainly a powerful card, just a little bit fringe. But this is another one of those, like in the way that we hate, or I hate this set and this block, this is a card that gets forgotten about. Like a lot of these cards, there's a lot of weird cards in Kamigawa block that just totally get forgotten about because people seem to have kind of a distaste for it.
Right.
It doesn't come up very often. All right. So
and by people, you mean
myself.
You.
I hate this set. I mean, like, just like some examples of cards that are like Bushi Tenderfoot, for instance. Do you even know what that card does?
Does it let you put a land into play from your hand?
No. Okay, it's like one white for like a 1/1 or something. And I think when a creature dealt damage by it dies, it flips and turns into a legendary 3/4 double strike. So like in theory, you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. You're like, so, okay, I'd play this on turn one and then a combat trick would flip this and then I'd have a 3/4 double strike. Like that's kind of the idea.
Okay.
But it's like you have to jump through so many hoops.
Yeah.
To justify playing this 1/1/1 that might just get 2/1 because...
Well, my favorite example is there's the flyer that says, if you give this creature flying, it doesn't have flying, but if you give it, flip it, and then all creatures have flying.
Right.
But if you have a thing that gives one card flying...
Yeah, right.
You're most likely fine already, or you're playing with a terrible card.
Yeah, right. I mean, like, so they were trying to design for limited in some cases. I mean, like, seriously, there's a bunch of flip cards, and if you were to... Like, I have a archival knowledge of Magic cards. Like, I think, for the most part, you could name 85% of Magic cards to me, and I could read you the text, like, off memory, right? Like, I've done this game before with girls I've dated, where I'm like, pull this Adept app and scroll through a random search and name a card, I'll name it for you.
Has that worked for you?
It's worked well.
Okay.
And I usually win. If you come across any one of the flip cards, that might be the only one that I can actually name. I think I just used it up.
All right. So, number seven.
Number seven, I went with Pithing Needle.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, pretty classic sideboard card.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Pithing Needle is one mana artifact that as it enters the battlefield, name a card and activated abilities of that named card can't be played unless they're mana abilities.
Yeah.
I have this slightly higher than you.
Yeah. This is one of those cards. It's super unexciting to have on this list, but like, it's really good.
It's been a huge role player in Magic's history since it was printed.
It just showed up.
It's in every format.
It just showed up in the Eldrazi sideboards.
Yeah.
I mean, it was big there. It's good against a lot of different things. I'm trying to remember.
It's kind of a catch-all because you can name something, and what it does is you can just play it early, knowing what your opponent's playing. It's one of the better removal spells against Planeswalkers. Like, there's just so many random decks that this hoses that it's just a fine card to play, and sometimes it's a house.
You can also take out Fetchland if you name it before they play it.
Yeah,
which is not known by a lot of people. But if you nowadays with like Ataxian Probe being what it is, it's totally, totally possible to just probe someone on turn one, see their hand, see their fetch, play Pithing Needle, name the fetch, and just one mana LD, which is really, really, really,
it's really good.
Yeah.
All right. So my number seven.
Okay.
Desperate Ritual.
That is my number six.
Oh, cool. So we switched. So number six, your six is my six. Your six is my seven. My seven is your six.
Okay.
Yeah. So Desperate Ritual, one colorless, one red. Add 3 red mana to your mana pool. Splice onto the arcane for 1 and a red. That comes up a total of no times in the history. It comes up once in a while because you could have two.
Probably come up before.
Yeah, no, it's for sure come up. Because if you have two Desperate Rituals in your hand, you can splice one onto the other one in Storm, and that's just good.
Yeah. It's getting a free card.
But this is purely a Storm card. It sees play 99.99999% in Storm decks.
Yep.
If this was 2 years ago, this would be much higher on my list. It is lower now because Storm hasn't done super well in the last 2 years, especially since Infect got Become Immense.
Right.
Because all the pros are like...
Such a good card. I'm so surprised that Become Immense didn't get... Like, it didn't just... Okay, the first Pro Tour that was legal, it was a big role player. Like, all the... What team is that? SCG? It's the SCG team?
Channel Fireball. Played Infect.
Channel Fireball, yeah.
Five of them played Infect. Yeah, including
Finkel. Yeah, and like that showed up, and that was the card. Now it's a staple in the deck. But it's just hilarious that when Become Immense was printed, the first thought everyone had and the first discussion on every thread wasn't just, this card is going to be stone cold bonkers in Infect. That's what this is.
Everyone's like, well, you don't need it because you already... Like, six is a weird number because you really want four because you already have 2 4s, so why do you need six? The other thing is, in everyone's defense, everyone was a little softer on Delve than they should have been when the set first came out. They were like, oh, but you don't want multiples. It's bad in multiples. When you look at Become Immense, it's really good.
Yeah.
But compare it to the blue Delph cards,
yeah,
and it's like almost garbage, which is insane with how good those blue cards are.
I mean, to be totally fair to it,
it's not garbage. Garbage is a strong word.
Because I would say not a card I had played with a whole lot, aside from the testing we've done with Infect. Like, that's where the card comes up. I mean, I talk every once in a while about Highlander Roulette and like building the decks that we build. And I just played against you the other day with this new green-white all-in sort of like double strikey kind of like green-white stompy, we'll call it, deck. And that's one of the cards that in those top deck situations in a game where you're like, they're at 18, I can top deck this one card and it will be the key to dealing 18 in a turn with like three lands on the table.
It's really good.
Like, people, yeah, you can win totally.
It's more to the point that like card. Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time are
totally
like
bonkers.
Totally bonkers. Busted good. Nuts. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But Become Immense is awesome. Yep.
All right. What's your... Oh, we know this.
Yours so we did our 7 and our 6, right?
Yeah, mine was Pithing Needle. Pithing Needle is sweet. It's great. Oh, my last little piece of trivia on Pithing Needle, because I didn't know I was just going to get out of here. Trinket Mage can find it. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, Trinket Mage can find it. It's also just...
Eskin, the like weird... There's like the Trinket Survival of the Fittest.
Right. Oh, what? Trinkle? Oh, you're talking about Artificer's Intuition?
Yeah, yeah.
Love that card.
That card's sweet.
Love that card. The thing, did we both fight that card on the Mirrodin episode?
Yeah, I think we, and separately, and I think I won and you lost. All right, number 5. We're now the top 5. Top 5, top 5, top 5.
My number 5 card is Goryeo's Vengeance.
Okay, mine's higher than that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I went Goryeo's Vengeance at number 5. It's not a card that has seen play in the format aside from two different times the deck has gotten popular. Originally, the Fury of the Horde deck, Goryeo's Vengeance deck, which was like the first printing of
Grizzle
Brand.
I feel like this is the same deck. It's just...
No, this now it's different now.
The Grizzle Band versus...
Yeah, because this one wins. This version of it wins with the Shoal.
Well, there's now a new one then, because there's the Grixis with Jace that just doesn't play.
Okay. So that's like the newest one. So that's the three versions then.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
The Fury of the Horde one is from... That was like a Magic Online 4-0 list that like dominated a PTQ season. Like,
yeah, I lost to it twice at... I've lost to it twice in my tournament play, but once at GP San Diego, and it was very frustrating.
Yeah, and it's powerful, but it was trying to use Fury of the Horde, which is like a free cold snap red spell that gives you an extra attack phase.
Because you use Grizzlebrand the chain and just basically three attacks.
Yeah, and then the second version of it is the Nourishing Shoal version that would like exile a worm to gain 15 life and then just a million cards with Grizzlebrand and all that.
Sure, and now it just uses the fact that Jace is really good.
Jace is just so bonkers. That card's so good.
Yep. Especially with cards like these where you're putting stuff in your graveyard anyways and you want a looter and you want to be able to flashback spells that you may have discarded. It's just really good.
Yeah. Really, right. Really, really nuts. So that is my card. Goryeo's Vengeance, for those that don't know, is an arcane spell. Instant, 1 black, 1 colorless, return target legendary creature from your graveyard to the battlefield, exiled at end of turn. Right? Exile or sacrifice? Exile.
Exile. And you can splice on arcane for 2 and a black.
Yep.
Fun fact. All right. My number 5, Lava Spike.
Okay. That's my number 4.
Okay. So 1 red. Do 3 damage to target player. It is an arcane. I guess that's not relevant.
This is like when I say, like when you talk about in a vacuum, how poor the power level is on the card, that this is this high on our list. On the other hand...
No, Burn's been... Like this have seen play in Burn forever.
This card has seen play in exactly one archetype ever and never will see play in another one.
It's true.
Just only... It is effective for one reason and one reason only.
If we return to a set where they use Arcane and or Splice onto Arcane again, this will not ever happen. But if that were to happen...
People still wouldn't play this.
Well, what if it like was a great like enabler because it was a 1-drop? I don't know. This is not
going
a universe.
Going to the dome is... Only sorcery speed to the dome has never been good and will never be good.
I do like how simple it is, though.
Yeah, it's true.
This might be one of the simplest Magic cards ever printed.
I'm also like super happy that it's hilarious to me that they reprinted this card, a common, in Modern Masters 1. And despite the fact that they reprinted it at common in Modern Masters 1, I want to say it's still worth like $4 or $4, right?
Yep.
It's like super funny. That's how popular Burn is as a deck.
Yeah.
And also how much Modern has grown since that reprinting. Because there's no $4, there's no way the printing of this card at common in that set shouldn't have done anything other than make it like a 50-cent card.
Right.
But there's been so much growth, people still just need the card.
Yeah. All right, number 4.
Yep. What do you got?
No, it's your turn.
No, I just did my number 4.
No, I did Lava Spike.
That was my number 4.
Oh. I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Okay. Gifts Ungiven.
Okay, that's my number two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So Gifts Ungiven, for those who don't know.
This was like
the defining card from this set during Standard.
Also, if you consider this is the most powerful card on the top tens, no question. That when you talk about the unique effect of a card
in Magic as a whole,
yeah.
Yes.
Like what
not in Modern, but in Magic.
Yeah, I mean it's close. I mean I have it at number two.
It doesn't see much play in Modern. It hasn't. Like there has always been Gifts decks that are fringe, but like
yeah.
There's never been a tier one Gifts deck in Modern.
There was for a little while. Early on in the format there was one. Like, LSV played.
I would argue like early on in the format was there wasn't actually tiers that existed,
yeah,
and people played
understand.
Cards
yeah.
that they thought would be good.
Yeah. I mean, it's really difficult to resolve four mana cards in Modern. Like it's
even instant speed ones. Yeah. And this might change. I think Gifts might be better now that Splinter Twin is no longer a deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
especially
tough.
Especially because like blue-red needs a like kind of thing to do now, and playing Gifts into stuff that like is slightly worse is something I can imagine being a thing.
Well, the reason that it's so hard, so for those of you that don't know what it does. It is an instant card for one blue and three colorless. Search your library for four cards with four different names. Your opponent separates them into two piles. Put one of those piles. No, you separate them into two piles?
No. Target opponent chooses two of those cards. Put those chosen cards into your graveyard and the rest in your hand, then shuffle your library.
So
one of the cute tricks you can do is only tutor for two cards, and they have to go to your graveyard.
So if you get Unburial Rites and a fat creature at end of turn, you can untap and immediately animate that creature.
Right. Generally Elesh Norn, because she's nuts.
Or Iona. Those are like
the two main ones.
Usual ones. So that's where that's the real power in Modern is that effect, because that's like what this is used for.
Right.
It's a really, really good card. It was great card in Modern or in Standard, and it can be a good card in Modern to set up Gifts packages. Like if you play, there's Gifts control decks, like for instance, that would play one Damnation, one Supreme Verdict, one Wrath of God, and one Day of Judgment in an Esper deck.
Right.
And you would guarantee
two board wipes against a creature deck if you needed them.
Yeah. Like you can, so there's like things you can do like that, which is what makes this card, same as Intuition, which is not Modern legal, interesting.
I think this deck will always be a on the fringe deck, tier two always. And then like there is a possibility that in the future the right format exists where this is one of the best cards in the format.
The reason that playing a card like this is so difficult,
that
is
just hasn't happened yet. So that's why it's on my number four versus my number two.
Well, and I was gonna say the reason that playing this card or playing say like Cryptic Command, which is like another one of the most powerful four drop instants in the format. So
the most powerful four drop instant in the format.
If you're playing against blue deck with counterspells, the format is so laden with instants that, first of all, you getting dispelled on this is such a bad feeling. It's a terrible feeling.
Oh, but also Collected Company. There's some... I don't know. This isn't that different from a Collected Company.
Getting remanded on this spell is a horrible feeling.
Yeah. Because you do it at the end of their turn, so then they tap out, and on your turn, you get to cast it without any counter magic up.
And lastly, if they're not playing counter spells, they're probably doing something aggressive enough that waiting till turn four to play your Haymaker card that's not going to actually have an effect until turn five is too slow.
That's why you're playing Snapcaster Mage Lightning Bolt to shut up their early turn.
Well, when it wins a GP, we can talk.
I'm going to play Gift Snap. I don't know why I'm defending your two.
I have it at number two, yeah.
All right, so number four, you did yours.
I had Lava Spike.
Yeah. All right, so number three.
So my number three is Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker.
Oh.
Is that your number one?
It's higher than number three. I'm keeping my mystery alive. You don't know. wow. What's your number? Did you not include? Okay. What? You're gonna enjoy my number three. Go.
I can't wait.
So Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker is two red legendary creature, Goblin Shaman Haste. Put a creature token into play. It's a copy of target non-legendary creature you control. That creature token has haste. Sacrifice it. Sit at the end of turn. It is a 2/2. He's also a legendary creature, Goblin Shaman. I don't know if I said that.
Yeah.
So sweet. He's Splinter Twin, the creature.
Yes. But the interesting thing about Kiki Jiki, what some people do not realize, is that it refers to a creature you control, which means it cannot be spell-scatted, which is...
Bum, bum, bum.
No, that's super relevant. That's always been with Kiki Jiki, like when you would consider yourself back in the old days, before they stopped playing Kiki Jiki and Splinter Twin, like they used to play, they'd play four Splinter Twin,
and
two
Kiki
Jiki.
Jiki.
Then it was like, we don't need to do this. There's no reason. So they stopped. But it used to be that you would know, okay, I have to be able to kill a Kiki Jiki because this spell skite's not going to save me if they resolve Kiki Jiki.
Right. Something also important with Kiki Jiki is because it's not an enchantment that goes on creatures, it works really well with Restoration Angel.
Right.
Which is arguably the best one of the creatures that can do this effect because it's a
3/4 flying angel that gains value when it comes into play with Flash.
Yeah, well, I mean, Kiki, like, so yeah, that, I mean, that's the other, infinite deck is the Kiki Resto deck.
And that's what Kiki Court plays generally, is it plays like a combination of everything. Like, there's definitely Kiki Jiki decks will always be good, and Kiki Court right now is really good.
Yeah, I've always been the person who feels that despite the fact that Splinter Twin cost 4 and Kiki Jiki cost 5, I would never argue that Kiki Jiki is the better card, but when you're talking about just like power level in a vacuum, I always have preferred Kiki Jiki because I hate the idea that I have to play a sorcery speed 4 mana aura to make that work, whereas Kiki Jiki is just good with lots of things and it's at least a creature that can attack for 2 as a top.
One of my favorite decks I've ever had was my blue-white-red Jeskai Kiki Angel deck, and I had like Wall of Omens and I would just like sometimes it's just Kiki Jiki on wall for like a couple turns and draw all the removal spells to kill them.
Yeah.
The other thing is that, and one of the reasons he's slightly better than Splinter Twin, and I do think it's possible once the Eldrazi ban happens that we'll see Kiki Jiki decks.
Yeah.
Like the old blue red Splinter Twin decks, but just with Kiki Jiki on turn 5, is that he's better against most removal spells because you're not getting 2-for-1. You're just getting 1-for-1.
Yeah.
And because, you know, he's slightly worse against Lightning Bolt theoretically.
Yeah.
But other than that, he is pretty sweet.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think Kiki's great, and this card has historically been good and fun, and funny that they decided to print it as like one of the, this was like one of the chase rares in Modern Masters 1.
It was
and
the mythic
2.
In both. It was the red mythic for both.
Yeah.
The non-cycle red mythic.
Now, do we know why they did that? Is that because there isn't a better one?
I think there are maybe arguably better ones now, but at the time especially, there weren't. What's a better red mythic?
Well, now, when we go to Zendikar, it'll be Guide. But before
No,
that,
Guide isn't
mythic?
A mythic, I don't think.
They'll shift it to mythic.
No, that feels much more like a Noble Hierarch kind of reprint. I think all spells in your graveyard have flashback from Innistrad.
Past and Flames?
Past and Flames is a mythic.
Yeah, but again, that's a card that...
But it's like...
It's like a $12 card.
Yeah,
now,
but they... Like, I can see them printing it at mythic. Like, they don't... Every mythic doesn't have to be a $15 card. Kiki Jiki is a $24 card now, I guess, but that it went up also because of the banning.
I just mean like it's when your mythics should be like pretty. I guess they printed Common Storm, so
yeah. No, like the problem with red is that red generally isn't good at mythic.
Yeah, true. Okay, that's fair. I mean, so yeah, maybe Pass in Flames just because it's like part of the storm package.
Yeah, and I can see there's one other red one I've talked to someone about. Eidolon of Great Revels,
because
it's like a cool enchantment slash one.
That'll be a Modern Masters card, but that'll be a Modern Masters
2019?
At least.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right.
Would it be that soon, or would it be...
Well, I think like Through the Breach, like you talked about before, I think now that's something that I can see them coming out as a mythic.
Yeah.
It does something really, really sweet, so I can see that being a mythic rare.
Yeah.
All right, so my number 3.
All right.
Sakura Tribelder.
You put Sakura Tribelder on here?
Yeah.
All right, fair. I mean, I guess he's playing one deck in Modern.
So he's playing
one deck in
multiple
Modern.
Versions of Scapeshift decks.
He's playing, okay.
There have been 3 versions of the deck. So for those who don't know what Sakura Tribelder, it is green and a colorless for a guy named Sakura Tribelder. He is a creature snake shaman. He has sacrificed Sakura Tribelder for free. Search your library for a basic land card and put that card into play tapped, and then shuffle your library. He is a 1/1.
So in the old days, when you could put damage on the stack, Sakura Tribelder was a total all-star. Card was insane. Like, that was like one of the best commons ever printed. Now it's just...
Really, really good.
This
is a weak field, and like...
You put it at number 2.
Yeah.
It's rampant growth.
No, number 3.
It's rampant growth that blocks...
It's number 3.
Oh, because I jumped ahead to my number 2?
Yeah.
It's rampant growth that blocks one time.
Yeah, in a deck that's really good when you do that. It does everything that deck wants to do. You want a fog, you want a mana ramp.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I get it. Like,
and I would argue he's probably underplayed in other decks. I think you could probably play this in like any type of deck that's trying to ramp with basics. You could play this.
Okay, in Highlander Roulette, which has the massive card availability pool, huge availability, 600 cards between 6 decks.
Yeah, I'm playing him.
I have 0 Sakura Tribelders.
Yeah, I thought that was
a
mistake.
600...
I like argued against you for like 10 minutes the other week about how you should probably be playing this card.
No, and what you have to have a deck that wants to be ramping.
Do you have Escape Shift in any of your decks?
No.
Well, that's a mistake as well.
Yeah, I just don't have a deck for it.
Do you have a deck with mountains and forests?
Not enough.
Could you add a few more mountains?
No, my decks are good. They play 3 colors, not 2.
I'm rolling my eyes. The people on the internet can't hear. All right, now, number 2. What's your number 2?
I just told you, gifts.
Oh, okay. Mine is Gore's Vengeance.
Okay, so we already talked about Goryeo's Vengeance. So I want to know what your number one is, because it's clearly not on my list. You know what my number one is.
No. So Goryeo's, first, let me talk about Goryeo's Vengeance is number two. It's really hard for me to talk about a card that I think should be banned out of the format, or have argued should be banned out of the format. I don't necessarily believe that anymore, but I have argued it many times. Isn't in the top two cards on my list. Like, I couldn't put it below that. It, like, this is a card that often is talked about as one of the most broken cards in the format, and we can't say that and then not put it at the top of the list from a set that's pretty underpowered.
I put it at 5. It's arguably more powerful than some of the other cards I put on here. My one thing with Goryeo's Vengeance is that it's the fact that you're limited to legendary creatures, and the creature is gone.
Yeah, but legendary creatures known as Emrakul and Grizzlebrand, the two biggest things ever printed.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I suppose this should be higher for me, considering that my number one is a similar effect, and this is just
like if you look at the legacy equivalent to this deck, which is the
Reanimate.
No, reveal a card and it comes into play. You each put a card in the play.
Show and tell.
The show and tell decks, which is comparable. Like, the best possible cards to reanimate are both legendary creatures.
Yeah, true.
Are the both ones that bring in play.
My point is null and void. It should be higher on my list.
And my number, what was your number one?
Through the Breach.
Oh, mine was Kiki Jiki. Wait, yours was Through the Breach?
Yeah.
Really? Through the Breach was your number one and not Goryeo's Vengeance?
I know. I was going to say, I struggled to figure out what my number one should be, but my argument was that it feels like Goryeo's Vengeance will, like, I was just valuing the legendary thing too much, because realistically, Through the Breach, you want to be putting legendary things into play. Like, but Through the Breach, I feel like, has seen play in more versions of more decks over Modern's history than Goryeo's Vengeance has.
I don't think either. I don't think there's been a single deck where both of them weren't seeing play in the same deck.
No, there was, because there used to be the Through the Breach Tron decks. That was a whole entire season of Modern. That was a whole season.
Yeah.
And it was good.
Like, not as good as
regular Tron. And like the Through the Breach decks now that play Primeval Titan.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Through the Breach is more versatile. Okay. That's why I like Through the Breach. It doesn't require you to jump through
fairer,
as many.
It's though, which is why it's not as...
It costs 5, yeah. the one that costs 2.
Sometimes costs 4.
Yeah. But
I will agree that should have probably been my number 3 slot.
Through the Breach?
Yeah, I'll give you
that. I don't know how you put it at 9. The cards you put ahead of it.
Yeah.
How do you put Desperate Ritual ahead of Through the Breach?
Because that card's really... rituals are all good. Any ritual is going to be on a top 10 list because Storm... all right, my number one, Kiki Jiki.
Yeah, okay, fair. Yeah, we just talked about it.
Yep, it's only really... mythic red that's apparently good.
Yeah, it's number 3 for me. I mean, I thought about putting it at number 1, but I was just like, it's just has historically only been good in like one context as the not as good
that's
version.
That's not true. Like the amount of decks that Kiki Jiki has been like a piece of has actually been pretty wide, because you have Splinter Twin decks, you have the old Kiki Jiki Birthing Pod decks, you have the now Kiki Cord decks, you have Blue White Red decks, you have Grixis ones. Like, yes, generally the idea is he's going to go infinite, but a lot of the times he's also used as just a value play creature that's really good.
Right.
Versus Splinter Twin, which, like you argued, didn't deserve to think to be as high as I put it on our list when we did red cards.
Yeah, I just have a conflicted relationship to that whole idea.
Clearly. Which I think you're wrong about, but beyond that, Kiki Jiki is a more versatile card than that is.
Fair.
Which is why you like it more.
Yeah.
You talked about that already.
Yep.
All right. So can we all agree that Kiki Jiki is probably the best card in the set?
Yeah, I mean, I had it at number 3 and...
Versus Through the Breach.
I mean, yeah, like, this is a, such a, like, a less refined top 10 than some of the ones we do.
Because you hate Kamigawa Block.
Because I hate Kamigawa Block so much that I can count on one hand
you know
the number of...
Oh, so the reason we're doing this week is because you can draft it right now.
Yeah.
Right now, the whole set is available
on
Modo.
I'll definitely be doing that.
I did it. The only time I've drafted on stream successfully so far, I did Kamigawa, triple Kamigawa.
Was it fun?
No. It was, I did not know it. I lost in the first round. I made some green-white deck that had, I think, 4 of the fog that's in this set.
Oh,
main
nice.
Deck. Because I was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Was it Curtain of Light? Is that the one?
No, it's just an arcane fog. I don't know what it's called.
Okay.
It's one mana white fog.
You love fogs.
I do love fogs.
Yeah.
But I like to be totally honest, I just got cut because I didn't know how to read singles in a set that I didn't know what the singles would be.
Well, thank goodness you didn't end up with just like a deck full of snakes.
That was my attempt.
Yeah.
I had snakes. I was white-green snakes, which is apparently not a thing.
Sashiro or something like that.
Snakes are sweet.
Yeah.
Snakes are the
sweetest.
There's
like an uncommon lore.
See, like, this set would be so cool if it was like tribal snakes, tribal rats, and you have like ninjas and samurai, and just like sweet.
Oh, we forgot to mention that actually ninjutsu is really cool. Ninjutsu is the one. That's the one mechanic in this set.
Well, even Bushido, which is the samurai mechanic,
yeah.
It's not exciting, but it's not. It's just It's just like a great role player. Like Wizards had said, like if we didn't name this Bushido, we'd probably have reprinted it a bunch now.
It's the reason Bushido is okay. Bushido is like a fine limited mechanic.
Well, Bushido is Bushido X, and whenever it blocks or gets blocked, it gets plus X, which is just like I'm better when I'm fighting creatures.
Yeah,
cool.
But
Ninjutsu is super sweet because you replace the creature that is about to do damage, and then you can get cool. Like triggers, I think ninjutsu. I would love to go to a set with samurai ninjas.
Yeah, Ninja of the Deep Hours. They brought ninjutsu back in Plane Chase once, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was a success because ninjutsu is cool. I mean, there was that Ninja Bear Delver deck that was really good. Travis Wu was playing.
And I had the Ninja Bear. That was on my like list at one point, and it got cut because that's not a real deck.
Yeah,
but it's cool, but it's not
Ninja of the Deep Hours. Yeah. You mean? Yeah, he was on my list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's cool though. So that actually is
ninjutsu is a sweet mechanic. It does like just like an all ninja deck is sweet because you like. Basically just keep rebuying attack triggers.
Ooh, are some of the ninjas rogues also? Could we make some sort of ninja rogue
I don't
deck?
Think they are.
Oh, I would love to call my deck ninja rogue.
All right, so.
We're going to do our top five.
Our five most underplayed cards.
Okay, so you've won all of these. And I feel like all of them. I feel like there's something a little unfair here, which is that I feel like what ends up happening is that because it's random, which card is fighting against which card, sometimes you get the benefit of the doubt and you just get lucky. And then also, I actively try to pick cards that are worse and sweeter.
That's objective.
You always pick cards that are like, well, this has seen a little bit of play, but not enough play. And I'm always like, Survivor of the Unseen. Or like, you're like, you know what I mean? Like you.
There's maybe a few of those cards on my list here.
You end up being like.
Yeah, but the ones that I do pick, even if that's true, they're sweet when
you end up being like, I'm going to choose Delay. And I'm like, I'm going to choose Sage of Epitir. Like, that's, like, what ends up happening.
You need to pick better cards. It's not my fault. Of all of the blue cards, you pick Sage of Epitir.
Sweeter cards. And Sage of Epitir is unbelievable. Do you know how sweet the deck... I've been messing around with this, by the way. How sweet a deck would be with, like...
I'm going to just take a nap. You talk.
Listen. Ethervile, Counterbalance, Sage of Epitir, Fairy Imposter, Quickling, Void Mage Prodigy... And I feel like there was one other card that came to mind for me.
I feel like I shouldn't help you, but you probably should play that Fairy Lord.
Yeah.
Because you're playing a bunch of fairies, and you probably should be black and
play. A couple fairies, but like, think about how, and then like Spellstrike, right? Like, think about how sweet it is when somebody tries to cast something and you have Active, Vile, and Counterbalance on the table to flash in Sage of Epitir and look at the top four to get a Counterbalance trigger. And then because Fairy Imposter is like a 2-1 for one flying or like Quickling returns it, you can then like end of turn either Vile or flash one in to like get the Epitir back to your hand.
So for this to work, you need to get three different cards, have them all not die, and one of them actively doesn't do anything unless you have the combo going
fetch
on.
Fetch lands, okay, with Sage of Epitir. Seems really good to me.
No, I'm not. I'm saying Counterbalance. Counterbalance doesn't do anything unless you have a top.
I think that there's more here than you're admitting, but we've already done the blue section, and Sage already lost. So
let's move to this week's and stop complaining because I'm obviously like sweeter cards than you do.
I have one that I really hope wins because it's right. And I think it's super.
You know, I always do mine just purely alphabetically.
Do you?
Or no, I do it by converted mana cost.
Oh, you
I don't know.
You're probably just saying that to mess with me.
Yeah, I'm just messing with you.
All right. So who's going to go first? I will go first.
You'll go first? Yeah, you're the challenger. I'm current reigning champ.
Get out of here.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, today we have the top five most underrated cards that should see more play that don't see enough play from Kamigawa Black. And starting off round one. Ben Bateman.
You will find these on our Twitter at the MMcast. You will need to vote on them in the next 24 hours.
Oh, you can actually extend them by days. So I'm going to actually have 3 days of voting this time. So it's not just the one day.
For three meals right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still haven't bought me a meal.
Yeah. Hopefully I can get it down to two right now.
All right.
All right. So card number one. My turn. Round one. Fight. Footsteps of the Goryeo.
Okay.
One black, two colorless. This is a better card than I usually choose. Sorcery, arcane. Return target creature card from your graveyard to play. Sacrifice that creature at end of turn. Sacrifice at end of turn, first of all, is something very, very important to remember here. It's not exile. So anything that has an enter the battlefield and a die trigger. So let's just pretend, for instance, that somehow you managed to just, I don't know, put Ashen Rider into your graveyard.
Ashen Rider is the one you're picking here?
I'm just saying, like, just think about cards that have enter and die triggers.
Yeah.
Like, on turn three, you get to just, like, double Stone Rain, like, with just playing footsteps. Like, that seems really good. Now, it doesn't get haste, so you don't get the attack. So you have to look for things like... You could do some crazy shenanigans with possibly Revelark. I don't know. Anyone?
Okay. All right.
And Protean Hulk. You can just win with Protean
Hulk. No, you're done. You can't talk anymore.
All right.
Shh.
The Protean Hulk deck wins. It's a real thing.
Yeah, we're all right, my number one. You ready?
Yeah.
Besiege Who Shelters All.
Oh, that's this is a legendary fair, land.
Besiege Who Shelters All comes into play tapped. Pay two life, add one to your mana pool if that mana is spent on an instant or sorcery spell. That spell can't counter by spells or abilities. So this card is sweet with all of the spells. All of the spells.
This card sees play.
Like in Scapeshift, you can play it. If you're playing against counter magic, it's so cool. I can't talk. Like it should be in every deck that has spells that you don't want to be countered.
It's right here, but it was like in my honorable mentions for actual cards, not interesting cards.
Yeah,
that's how
it got in here. Yeah. Yeah. This card's sweet. Legendary Land, Besiege Who Shelters All. It's like the best.
Does it win? Does it win the game on its own?
It actually can kill you on its own.
Footsteps of the Goryeo can kill you on its own.
No, yeah, we're past that. We're on round two.
All right, fine.
All right, round two.
Fight.
Fight. You're going first.
Erayo Soratami Ascendant, one of those ugly flip cards that I've mentioned. one blue, one colorless, flying 1/1 legendary creature, Moonfolk Monk. Whenever the fourth spell of a turn is played, flip Erayo Soratami Ascendant. It then immediately flips over into Erayo's Essence, which is a legendary enchantment that reads, counter the first spell played by each opponent each turn. This card is actually sweet. People have tried to build blue versions of Affinity that play this card and then empty their hand and then just have I counter the first spell you play every turn enchantment, which is really powerful. There's enough free spells and cheap spells between Mishra's Bauble and Gitaxian Probe you can play now. Actually getting this thing active is not that crazy. This probably almost fits into like a Death Shadow type of deck. So I think it's good. Yeah? What? Okay, sure.
No. So Aethersworn Canidus also locks someone out with it. That's something also cool you can do with this card.
Oh, because it counters
their first. In Affinity, you have both.
Yeah.
So they can't cast a spell ever again.
Okay, and with Aethersworn Canidus, Darayo's really sweet.
Yeah.
This card
You're
is
welcome.
Borderline.
I'm going to give you a pass.
Playable.
You take that pass. All right. So, mine. Time of Need. This is one green, one colorless sorcery. Search your library for a legendary creature card. Reveal it and put it in your hand, then shuffle your library. I love tutor cards. This lets you get every legendary creature you want. You want to get that Sorani thing you're talking about? You can get it. You want to get Kira Glassbinder? You can get it. You want to get any legendary creature of all time? You can grab it with this card.
Yeah, it's Time of
Need. You get the nice toolbox game plan going.
Toolbox. Time of Need's really sweet. Yeah. I'm a fan.
All right. Who wins? Time of Need or the... I can't say it.
So we'll do the countdown of all of these
cards.
No,
but we say it at the end. What was yours?
Oh, Erayo Soratami Ascendant.
Yeah, or Time of Need. Which one wins round two? All right, round three.
I hate that name. All right, round three. Fight, my card. I am going to choose Time of Need. Time of Need is one green, one colorless. For a sorcery, search your library for a legendary creature. Put it in your hand. Kessler just sold you on this card. this card is sweet. This card is totally everything. There's so many good legendary cards that it only costs two. It's a great tutor. It's underplayed. It gets Kiki Jiki. That's the one you didn't mention that is the most relevant legendary creature pretty much you can get. It's probably relevant that you can get Emrakul or Gristlebrand, but more than likely, I mean, there's just a lot of really, really good legendary creatures that can be gotten in Modern that are very powerful. So I like Time of Need a lot. It doesn't see enough play. People get close sometimes playing it. Not quite. Very good. That is my card. Kessler, what do you got? Kessler's number three.
Footsteps of the Goryeo.
Okay, sell it.
What was the card you mentioned?
I'm not going to tell you.
No. You got to tell me.
Protean Hulk?
Protean Hulk. All right, you get Protean Hulk back, you win the game. So basically, Protean Hulk, what it says is when it dies, you can put any amount of creatures from your deck into play equal to eight?
Six.
Six. Yeah. And there's a very specific amount of cards that lets you win the game.
There's a combination of like body double and... It's like body double.
Oh, no, it's just body double, and that's it. And then body double can bring that back, and then it sacks itself, and then it's just an infinite loop.
Yes.
That's what it is. Cool. So there we go.
Some stuff with Revelark, I think you have to do, but I can't remember exactly. I've seen it happen before. It wins instantly if
it's
undisrupted. So that's a real thing.
Yeah, it's the best. It's sweet. That's my number three.
All right, my number four.
How did I forget that card? I remember you. All right, you're number four.
My number four is Iganjo Castle.
Yeah.
This is a legendary land that saw play in the beginning of the format.
No, it's with Geist every time.
Yeah.
When Geist sees
play. Nobody plays Geist anymore, but they used to. And they will again. It is a legendary land. Tap, add one white to your mana pool, one white and tap. Prevent the next two damage that we dealt to target legendary creature this turn. Most importantly, it is an untapped white source that comes into play on turn one, as well as the fact that it is a land that taps to prevent the 2 damage to Geist that would happen if they blocked. So it is, makes it very difficult to kill your Geist of St. Traft or any other legendary creature that you think is particularly good. It's not usually going to protect a Kiki-Jiki, because at the time that you resolve Kiki-Jiki, you probably don't have the extra 2 to protect it with this. But sometimes, and it's powerful, the fact that it combos so well with Geist is very relevant. So
it's kind of the point.
Yeah.
It's like it makes him unstoppable. It's really fun.
It's really good.
All right. My number 4, Knight of Soul's Betrayal. This is a legendary enchantment, black, black, 2 colorless. Legendary enchantment. I said that already. All creatures get -1/-1. It's really good. One of the sweet things that this card does do is if you're able to make their lands into creatures as 1/1s, you just kind of start their lands to death.
Of all of their lands dying. Yeah,
That's what lands sound like when they die. I don't know if anyone knew that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the really cool things you can do with it. Another cool thing you can do is just kind of lock some people out of the game. It was pretty good against Splinter Twin decks also, because it either killed the 2/1...
Pestermite,
and or made it so their Exarch couldn't kill you. So it was really good in that situation.
Yep.
So just as a sideboard card, it's been pretty good, but also sometimes just your opponent can't beat it.
Seems powerful. Yep.
Yep. Like Affinity. Rex Affinity. All right, your turn.
Before I do my final one, I just want to point out, like, I think it's so bizarre. You know, I'm like slowly but surely building my Twitter following, like slowly, okay, right? And I do like a lot of stuff in different worlds of entertainment and like gaming media. But like, I think that literally half of, I'm over 1,000 Twitter followers now, finally. And I think half of my followers are Magic cards. Like with this.
Most of mine are.
Yeah, but like I do like a ton of like on-camera stuff, like sports, I do entertainment. Sure. Like,
you should be doing this in the Twitter section and stop stalling about bringing up your number 5. What's your number 5?
All right, sorry.
Number 5.
My number 5 card, which is I think my sweetest one, and a card, I'm going to say it, I guarantee you're going to have no idea what this card is, but it should win. A card called Toshiro Umezawa. You know what that is?
Does he have a Jitte?
No. Well, I think that he is the guy, yes. But yeah, but he doesn't have it. I don't think he has it in the picture, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Tell me what he does.
He has a sword. All right. Black, black, colorless, 2/2 legendary creature, human samurai, Bushido 1. Whenever a creature an opponent controls is put into a graveyard from play, you may play target instant card in your graveyard. If that card would be removed, would be put in a graveyard this turn, removed from the game instead.
How much does he cost?
3 for a 2/2 Bushido 1. He's a 2/2 for 3 that if you kill one of your opponent's creatures, he Snapcaster Mages one of your instants.
That's pretty sweet.
He's a reusable Snapcaster if you can find a way to consistently kill your opponent's creatures.
He's a 2/2?
For 3. I mean, he dies to Lightning Bolt. He's not like, this okay, is not a staple, but like the fact that like I when I discovered this card fairly recently, had never heard of it, and you clearly have never heard of it.
Yeah, I don't even know the card existed.
It's Umezawa. I don't understand how this is not a card that people know about. Umezawa's Jitte. Ever heard of that card?
I mean, he's the guy from the art, right? He's like bald and has like a ponytail.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know what he looks like.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty sweet, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
What are you going to beat me with?
Another legendary creature.
Okay.
He has maybe also found a Jitte once or twice.
Okay.
Godo, Bandit Warlord.
Oh my goodness.
Legendary creature, human barbarian. He costs 6 mana, 5 and a red. When Godo, Bandit Warlord comes into play, you may search your library for an equipment card and put it into play. If you do, shuffle your library. When Godo attacks for the first time each turn, untap it and all other samurai you control. After this phase, you get an additional combat phase. You know what he's really good with?
What?
Batterskull.
He's really, really powerful.
Because Batterskull also has Vigilance, so he gets to play with the second attack step.
Yeah, Batterskull's really, really good. I mean, it costs here's 6. The deal. It's
yes, a 3/3 for 6. But we can cast 6 drops now that we no longer have to worry about Splinter Twin killing us.
I mean, it's a 6/6. It's a 6 mana 3/3. It gets
right,
bolted.
But play like well, yeah, but you have the Batterskull in play still.
Yeah, I mean, it gets you Batterskull. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
You get the Batterskull. Yes, yeah. They can bolt Godo, but who cares? You use it as you put it at the top end of a control deck. You just like a Snapcaster Mage, he just comes in at the end, and you just, bam, you win because you have Batterskull.
Isn't just playing a Batterskull better than playing Godo?
No, because you also have the 3/3, so it's way better against Colgan's Command.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I hate Colgan's Command so much. We're playing in that Highlander tournament this weekend, and one of the prizes is foil Colgan's Command and something. I think it's like foil gifts, maybe.
I don't know.
Or something sweet. It's like the third prize. Like third place gets that.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
I was talking to Eric and he was talking, like, because he didn't buy them when the announcements happened. So he actually got wrecked on 2 cards because they like.
Colo went up a lot.
But he gained some money on Emrakul going down.
Yeah. Foil from 20 Jace.
So that was number 5. What was your pick?
My number five was Toshiro Umezawa.
All right, mine was Goto Bandit Warlord. So that's the top five Kamigawa picks. Why don't we walk through them? Number one, Boseiju versus
Footsteps of the Goryeo.
Number two, Time of Need versus
Eraio Soratami Ascendant.
Number three, Footsteps of the Goryeo versus
Time of Need.
It's like the one we shared. Number four, Knight of Souls Betrayal versus
Iganjo Castle.
And number five, Goto Bandit Warlord
versus Toshiro Umezawa.
Now, as a reminder, if you go to Twitter, you get to vote on these, and that's how we decide who wins, and we'll announce the winner next week. There'll be 2 days, so we'll generally launch the voting on Wednesday, and by Friday it should be closed. That's your chance to vote and see which one of us wins a dinner.
And see how silly Kessler is for choosing Goto Bandit Warlord. To be fair, it was my number six, and I barely
Goto
cut
versus,
it.
I feel like I'm with, like... I feel like I've got that. I feel like I'm a little bit more
you
afraid
think
of other rounds.
Toshiro Umezawa is going to lose?
Yeah, to Goto Bandit Warlord. People love that guy.
I love
that
guy. Toshiro's like an actually borderline playable black Snapcaster mage.
Goto Bandit Warlord is a actually playable red Stoneforge Mystic.
My card costs three. Yours costs six.
Yeah, my card gets a batter skull.
My card can...
You have to play your card. It has to survive a turn, and then you have to kill a thing your opponent has. And then you get a spell out of your graveyard.
It seems sweet. It has Bushido, too.
That's fun. Mine's riding a warthog.
Mine is the guy that owns the Jite.
My guy is holding some spears. Three of them.
Yeah.
My guy owns the batter skull.
All right, fair. Fair enough.
All right. So that's it for today's episode.
That does it.
I want to remind everyone, please check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone.
Yes, please. They are sweet. They do awesome stuff.
Please make sure to keep your eyes out. This week is GP Detroit, so we're going to be actually finding out what the modern format, if there's any chance that we can beat the Eldrazi. I'm currently at no.
You'll be there.
I'm going to be there.
You're going to be at GP Detroit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you're at GP Detroit, you should come find me and say hi. I'm going to be hanging out, walking around. Only on day one, though.
I would also be there if my mother were not coming into town. My mom is coming into Los Angeles.
You love your mom?
I have to
Lame.
Take care of my mom.
Nerd.
Otherwise, I would be in Detroit. But we will be, I think, based on the success of support from you guys helping us out
das
with Patreon.
Patreon.
I think that, like, I need to look at the levels because it's been a second. But I want to say that...
The $1,000 mark is we go places.
Are you sure?
Yep.
I thought it was higher than that for some reason. But whatever it is, I believe there's a level that gets us to a point where you and I attend all of the modern...
Both of us going is, I think,
3,000? Yeah. If we get to 3,000 a month eventually, then you and I will be at every modern Grand Prix. We're also going to start streaming podcasts live. And we're going to do like live
We're already
going
to do audio. We already have to do audio live.
Yeah, we're going to do like live actual podcasts though, which is a cool thing.
I almost had us do this one live, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Next one, maybe.
Super
maybe
sweet.
Maybe not. All right. So we want to thank you guys for listening, as always. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. That's where you get the vote on the contest. That is at the MMCast. I am personally at Kess Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
And make sure to check out the Patreon. Make sure to check out our sponsor, Grimoire Deck Boxes from WizardryFoundry.com. You can actually get in a raffle to get a cool 3D printed one.
Yeah.
Make sure to check out the Command Zone, and we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the MMCast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.